This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. Signature support from First Financial Tax and Accounting Service. Send emails to talk@talklouisiana.org. Our number, 877-217-5757. A few days ago, Mayor President Sharon Weston Broome appeared before the Baton Rouge Rotary Club, as she's done the last few years, and gave a State of the City assessment. And last year was not a pleasant year as far as deaths by murder and by opioid abuse. And with us to give us an update and more is the district attorney who's on the front lines every day of the year, Hiller Moore. Good morning.
Glad to be here, Jim. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. And before we get to the particulars, what are the actual raw numbers?
Well, nationwide, the numbers were up for violent crime and down for just about everything else. Really kind of unusual year, 2020, 2021. But for us, bottom line, murder was 149 uniform crime report homicides. That's a big number, biggest number ever. Last year before, 2020, was 114, I believe. So, significant increase. Significant increase in domestic violence and intimate partner-related violence compared to the 2 years.
149 for East Baton Rouge Parish. That's homicides. And opioids?
So opioids numbers are still pending, but as of December 1st, we had 236 confirmed from opioids. And generally, that overwhelming majority are fentanyl-related. And we had 56 pending toxicology cases. So you're going to be near 330, 40 probably for the year versus 200, a little over 200 from last year. So the number continues to rise. And that number was, I think, 3 years ago was maybe 88. Mm-hmm. So that's significant increase, and that number probably gets less attention and talk than the homicide number.
And it is surprising because this is one that affects the white community, and murders do too, but they're mostly black victims we're talking about. But this hits all sectors, black, white, young, old, rich, poor,
yes,
college educated, not college educated, and it is a tragedy of enormous proportion.
I think you also add to that male, female, different age
that's
ranges, Hispanic, you name it. And so if you look at a map of regular crime, then you look at a map of homicides or non-fatal shootings, it's a certain map that seems to be the same map over and over again. When you look at the map of heroin, fentanyl, overdose deaths, it pretty much lights up the parish. It also highlights certain hotels, motels, and certain big highways where hotels and motels are, which also is a telltale sign. So,
why is that a telltale sign?
Well, people are dying in hotels and motels.
They go there to get high, or
yes, yeah. Oh, you know, and so we'll find a lot in bathrooms at restaurants, short time restaurants that people die there, because when they get this drug, it's a deadly drug. They don't wait around to use it; they use it immediately. And they get to it as quick as they can.
877-217-5757. Now, to die of this kind of tragedy, normally a person has to have the money to purchase the drugs. And now, because of stimulus checks, people get these quick fixes, and sometimes they take that money and use it for things that are not good for their health and may kill them. Is there a correlation between that and this increase we've had?
Yeah, so what we're seeing is that the amount of money that it really takes to buy this heroin, and you really don't know what you're getting, it's really not terribly expensive. So it is readily available as well. It's not expensive, and that's why it's being widely used. But we have seen when Dr. Lawrence Scott gave his talk to the Baton Rouge Business Report, he looked at the stimulus checks and how it affected business in Baton Rouge. And the dates just were kind of striking to me. And so I took the dates back to our First Sergeant Armstrong from the National Guard, who does a lot of our intelligence work with the data. And it's truly, we saw an increase in not only opioid overdoses, but also deaths around the same time as the checks hit. So unfortunately, the checks were being used also for drugs, amongst other things. And that was nationwide. It was kind of curious for people around the nation that we talked to, because we really didn't know what was going to happen with the with COVID, when people were back at home with their family, would it be better for them or worse? Well, our numbers have obviously increased.
Well, we've had well over 200, maybe close to 300 deaths related to opioids, 149 homicides, and then there's COVID. And COVID has affected the court system.
Yes.
It's also affected the jail, hasn't it?
Yes. So beginning even before COVID, we had a concerted effort to try to reduce the pretrial jail population. But since 2018, our jail population is 45% decreased. We were around 2,100. We're around 1,100 now. And now with the new wave of COVID, we will not be booking anyone in jail for misdemeanors outside of violent misdemeanors, such as domestic violence type of offenses.
And people are getting charged with crimes, and there's a long wait. And sometimes, in fact, I think the chief, I know he has, he said it to me personally, that a good number of them are posting bond, and they're out there. And sometimes, as we know, people who do things one time will do it again and again. Is that a concern?
Sure, it always is a concern. And you know, I always say that it's I would not want to be a judge to have to make those decisions. Those are tough decisions that judges have to make on setting a bond on a pretrial person that's presumed innocent. But we do have some people that are out on multiple bonds, which is frustrating, particularly those that are out on gun crimes and multiple mm-hmm. violent offenses. So we all, as a system, have to work together, do a better job of informing those that are in the bond process of actually what the facts are and what the history is so that a proper bond can be set. Because we do not want people that are not violent staying in jail pretrial. But those who are violent and could wreak havoc to our community, which has happened, we think that they should stay in jail regardless of their ability to pay and make bond.
877-217-5757 and talk at talklouisiana.org for Hiller Moore, who has one of the toughest jobs in all of the state. And we'll talk about a national trend. Baton Rouge is not unique in this uptick on homicides. And at the same time, somewhat weirdly, other crimes, the numbers have fallen during COVID, but homicides are not the case. And the chief, when I had a brief conversation with him the other day at Louis, he indicated of these 149 that there aren't 149 killers out there, that some people who are at large may be responsible for 10 or 15 of these.
I don't think there's any doubt that we have people that not only kill once but kill multiple times, or their groups, maybe not them personally individually kill, but their groups kill multiple times. And that's surely who we're focused on at this point. But that is, I think what the chief tells you is accurate based on intelligence, and I think he's accurate.
But when you were growing up, as was I, you went to Brother Barton, and I understand people used to go to the cemetery and settle their grievances after school.
Sure. That's a daily routine in high school in New Orleans. And, you know, people would fight, fist fight. They wouldn't pick up a knife. They wouldn't pick up a gun. And we're talking about, you know, folks that now may resolve their differences by a gun. But the other thing is they can do it from far away as well. And they can do it with a weapon that shoots very quickly.
And not only resolve their differences with a gun, but it may start as a fist fight and then the person who's aggrieved comes back with a gun, and then yes. If you're not home, they'll shoot your family or your friends.
Yes, and so normally it's now not starting with a fist fight, but it's now starting on social media.
That's the catalyst.
Absolutely, and that's where we see a lot of the talk back and forth. And, you know, we always talk about here on the show and other places that murder is not accidental, generally. But we have had some glaring examples where someone who's completely innocent has been killed, like the gentleman at the barbershop that was killed. He's completely innocent, just a good man, good family man with a family. The 5-year-old killed in the back of the car, you know, that's just crazy. And you feel for those people because they had nothing to do with any beef whatsoever.
It's unfathomable. The guy at the barbershop had a newborn child, and he's just getting a haircut.
Yes, and to hear his wife talk, I don't know if you were able to see or hear her. She has been on the television. She's a great spokesman now. Unfortunately, she's now in that position. But just to hear her talk about the loss that she has and how many generations that's going to cause pain to. It's hard to imagine. So with 149 murders, that's a lot of pain. A lot of red tape, a lot of crime scene tape in Baton Rouge that we don't need. And Jim, if you compare the years, you know, with 149, it's easy kind of to say, but it's a lot of people. In 2013, our number was 64. And then following that, 63, then 78, then 62 in 2016, then numbers start to jump. And it seemed to be January has been a big month, like last year, 17 murders in January. That's normally January was 1, 2, or 3.
Well, usually these kinds of things supposedly don't happen in cold weather months. Well,
well they happen more inside, maybe outside.
And, they're happening. We'll talk about this. We've got to take a break. But they're also happening in the middle of the day instead of late at night.
That's a good point, yes.
So we'll talk about that, and we'll go to the phone lines. 877-217-5757 is your number. We'd like to hear from you. Hiller Moore will be with us for... This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Alondra Villarreal is producing, and your number is 877-217-5757. Before we go to the phone lines, Hiller Moore, the DA, is with us, and the man who handles East Baton Rouge Parish, where there were 149 homicides in 2021. Now they're occurring middle of the day. Used to be that we thought crime was violent crime of that kind usually occurred at night in warm weather. Well, now it's cold weather, middle of the day. What's going on?
So we surely have generally hours that we see murders occur, 9 to 10 o'clock at night, 11 o'clock to 1 o'clock in the morning. We have seen murders occur during the day, daylight hours, however, not nearly like we saw in 2020 and 2021, and that's one of the things that really stood out the most to us in looking at those 2 years compared to the years prior, where it looked like around 10 a.m. seemed to be a big daytime number where a lot of people were killed in both years. So that was quite unusual, and I think that also happened around the country, more daylight murders, less people were out on the street, less police officers, and make it easier to do what these people did.
Gustavo in Goodwood. Gustavo, you're on Talk Louisiana with Hiller Moore. Good morning, sir.
Good morning to both of you, gentlemen. Mr. Moore, I'm a great admirer of yours. Thank you for all of all you do for us. Jim, I believe you said 149 homicides in Baton Rouge. I thought there were close to 170 for 2021.
Okay, hold on. Don't go anywhere, but I want Hiller Moore to respond to that. Sometimes we do get different numbers.
So, Gustavo, I appreciate the call. That's a good point. So when I mentioned 149, that's 149 uniform crime reports. That's how all the cities look at and their homicide data. The number that you're referring to came from the coroner, which would also include negligent and justifiable homicides. So when we talk about uniform crime report numbers, that's what our country compare each other against.
Would the 170 also include suicides?
No, that would include justified negligent homicides.
Defending yourself.
Correct.
Okay. Okay, Gustavo, you had something else. I'm sorry. Go ahead, sir.
No, that's quite all right. Thank you. Mr. Moore, what do you think about the New York district attorney and his take on reducing severe crimes into almost misdemeanors that with no jail time and basically no incarceration whatsoever?
Yeah, I think that's very dangerous. I have not met the new DA. He's only been in office now for 7 days. We had a very good relationship with District Attorney Cy Vance, who was a very innovative prosecutor. This is a little hard to take. I'm not sure. I'm hopefully going to be back in New York soon to talk with him about why he's doing this, because he's suggesting reducing armed robberies to misdemeanor and not putting armed robbers in jail. I think people have to be accountable, and I think that's why we have some of the issues we have, is that when someone is not able to see inside a court, not able to see a jury, that they're more emboldened to do things. You have to hold people accountable for what they did, or things will continue to be the same. So, you know, I saw that article, and I was a little concerned.
Thank you, Gustavo. Bacchus in Gray Wolf Springs. Bacchus, good morning. You're on with Hiller Moore.
Hey, good morning, Mr. Moore. I want you to know that as a responsible person, I spent most of my money on rent, and I did buy a guitar. Second point, I carry a 9mm pistol with me when I go shopping at Walmart in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. I don't trust the police to protect me. So I don't know what to say about that, but they park their SUVs in front of the fire escape there at Walmart.
All right.
Look, things are difficult. We had a tough year, and everyone has a right to protect themselves, and you have to make sure, like I do, you have to make sure that you're protected, know where you are, where you go. We surely can't always count on police to be there.
But this gentleman should have a concealed carry permit.
Sure, absolutely. Unless he's an open carry person. It just kind of depends, but sure.
Well, yeah, you could. That's the great irony. You could go into Walmart with a gun on your hip.
You could. It generally doesn't occur, but it's...
But you could. If you hide it, that's concealed against the law.
And, yes.
Unless you have a permit.
Yes.
Stuart downtown. Stuart, you're on with Hiller Moore. Good morning. Hi. Happy New Year. Hi, Stuart. Do we have Andre?
Hello.
Hey, Stuart.
Yes. Good morning, Mr. Moore, Jim, and the audience, as always. Jim, I'll ask you to not hang up. I've got a multi-pronged question, Mr. Moore. First of all, regarding blight. Blight is a harrowing problem in the municipality of inner city Baton Rouge. I think if blight were addressed, that it could eliminate a lot of crime. We've got a lot of drug dealers now that are taking over abandoned properties and using that as their headquarters. Homelessness, crime, drugs, all of that kind of stuff going on in these abandoned homes. Secondly, I think if the police would concentrate the vast majority of their efforts on serious crime instead of toying around with people, I pulled you over because you've got a bad sticker. I mean, where's the priority on helping to save people's lives or messing with people behind a piece of paper stuck on a windshield or a license plate on a car? I mean,
all right. Thank you, Stuart.
Stuart, so absolutely, blight plays a big part in crime, and I think it should be part of the plan for the future is to try to eliminate as much blight as you can. There have been many studies across the nation, but also in East Baton Rouge Parish, about the violent crime that occurs within 10 yards of a blighted property. And so you're absolutely right. It does impact that. I believe that the police are focused on violent crime and not just pulling people over, because I get to review a big number of cases, 4,000 cases a year out of 10. And there are some traffic stops, but the traffic stops are in areas that it's not just for an inspection sticker. I think it's rare now that our traffic ticket issuance is down so low. It used to be maybe 14,000 a year or for maybe 40,000 a year. We're down the minimal amount of traffic tickets. So, I don't think that that's occurring. I know that that's surely not the chief's plan or the sheriff's plan is to just pull people over for a traffic violation.
All right. Karen writes, I don't understand if there's a small percentage of people responsible for the crimes, and that's been known for a few years, why there can't be a focus on getting those people off the streets.
That is exactly the focus, but getting people to cooperate.
It's easier said than done.
Absolutely, but she's exactly right. There's a small number of people that create the vast majority of the problems. And they're group and gang related, and they're drug related, but they are well protected.
They have money.
And they have a lot of money, and they show their money on social media, and nobody wants to talk about them because they're afraid of the retaliation. People in the community probably know who they are, and they're afraid to talk because of retaliation. Their house is being shot. Like you indicated, maybe it's not the person they have the beef with that might get shot because they can't find them, but it's the grandmother or grandfather. Our relative that gets shot at. So yes, it's we are trying to focus on those trigger pullers, and they're well known to us.
Some of these people are young people too.
Absolutely. You know, the number that we saw of people who were killed in 2021, the age 21 to 30 was the number one category, but right behind that was the ages of 31 to 40, and then 11 to 20 was the third range.
These are victims.
These were victims of crime.
The perpetrators, though, some of them are
young. And we saw last year we had 14 juveniles arrested for first degree or second degree murder, which is a big jump from 2020 at 5. So we do see a lot of juveniles committing very serious offenses.
And another listener asks about something we've discussed a few times, that there was a big spike in domestic violence incidents.
Yeah, I'm glad someone brought that up. So out of the 149 UCR murders, 36 were domestic violence and or intimate partner related. That's a big number, and that's a big reason why we jumped up so high. I think the year before, 2020, we were at 20. So there's a big difference between 2020 and 2021. And some years previous, we had two. And, you know, one is too many, but 35 was a big number, big jump. And I think directly related to COVID.
People are under stress.
Yes. And you talked about nationwide numbers. Homicide nationwide is up 29 to 30%. So Baton Rouge is not different than any other city. What's what we found different was that rape was down 12%, robbery down 9%, property crimes down 7%. Domestic violence across the country, based on 13 cities, seem to be even, which I don't accept, and drug offenses are down 14%.
We'll talk more with Hiller Moore if you'd like to get in. There is still time, 877-217-5757. We return with more Talk Louisiana after this brief pause. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana, 877-217-5757, and talk at talklouisiana.org. And a few listeners, they're piling on the mayor and the police chief for the high number of homicides we've had, 149 this year. Last year, actually, 2021, which is up from 114 in 2020. So it was a big increase, but is it convenient to blame the mayor and the chief, or
sure,
could they be doing something they're not doing?
No, sure, it's convenient to you know, blame them when you have this big problem. But look, this doesn't start with just one person, one office, one year. This starts way back generationally when the trigger puller is born. And then tell me about, if you tell me all about his history, I can tell you what his future is going to be. But education, family, you name it. You can't just cast the blame at the mayor, the sheriff, the city, judge, the DA. You can, but that's just not responsible to do it. Surely I see these people daily, and these people wear it. I think that the mayor owned it at the Rotary Club. She did a good job explaining that, look, she's upset, she's pissed like everyone else is, like we are. Because, we're in this fight every day, and we get angry. And you have to get up again and start again, but we hopefully have a plan to address those that are the violent trigger pullers and trying to get there. But without the community's help and without information, we cannot do this by ourselves.
877-217-5757 for Hiller Moore. Susan on Corsi. Susan, you're on the air. Good morning to you.
Hi, good morning there, gentlemen. Listen, since 2016, the flooding, we've all in one way or another tried to help the homeless. And it's gotten so out of hand now, they brazenly come into our carports, kick our fences down, come sit in our backyards, take stuff off the carports. And I'm on the neighborhood watch app, and all the neighbors are saying, it's out of hand. And during the fireworks, we know you're overworked, and our patients were about ready to run out. It went 3 days nonstop, the fireworks. And with the gunshots, 9 straight rounds. We need more East Baton Rouge in our neighborhoods since they took out the subdivision next to the firehouse. It's off the hook over there.
Right. She's right. A lot of people frustrated. Lack of manpower. I know that the Baton Rouge police are down 115 people. Not sure how many, if any, the sheriff are down. I'm sure they're down. I think that's an issue. I know that where she lives, which where she's talking about, that's a good community. A lot of good organization, a good neighborhood watch. The homeless is a big issue. Again, it's not only just Baton Rouge, but it also fits in with the COVID and economic times. But also, let's not forget mental health and opioid crisis, I think, hits the homeless more than anyone else. But she's right. And I think that anyone that sees anyone has a homeless problem coming in your carport, you have to call the police, sheriff's office immediately. They have to be reported and dealt with.
Now, as far as jury trials, with 149 murders in a year in the community, you might think, an average layman, I don't think would be unwise to think there must be at least 149 trials in Baton Rouge every year. How many were there last year?
Unfortunately, because of COVID, last year we only had 21, and those were generally at the end of the year coming out of COVID. And then 2020, we had 12 during the really high part of the COVID. normally we average 30 to 40 per year. And so that has a significant impact. I just read yesterday that Orleans has shut down jury trials again until March. We have not. We have many trials that are scheduled. But we probably have our backs against the wall with homicide trials. We probably have 230 to try. And when you have a year like 149 where you continue adding cases, and these are not easy cases. These are all difficult cases. And there's not been an arrest on every case, maybe 50 to 60%, but still we have to deal with those cases because they have victims and families associated with them.
Mitchell in Sherwood. Mitchell, you're on Talk Louisiana. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. 90% of these murders is coming in black neighborhoods and this black on black crime. Now, what could we do to help our young men who's get out of elementary school and they go to junior high school? And when they get to junior high school, it seems like it changes. And in our junior high school, we have a lot of gang related things going on. So we need to help these kids at this stage now, because they're the ones I see carrying a lot of guns around here. And you don't want to talk to them young kids out there because they will shoot you.
Unfortunately, Mitchell is absolutely correct. We do have a black-on-black crime problem, particularly homicide. The overwhelming majority of the victims are black and the defendants are black. And he's right. It is younger kids. They are in schools. They are in groups and gangs. I trust that Cito Narcisse, I think, has a good plan to try to help these young kids once they get out of high school, not only have a regular high school diploma, but have a certification that they can get a job. These young kids oftentimes do not have a father to speak with or a community to tell them no. They're raised by maybe other kids or by a grandmother, which is not always the best, although we've had so many good successes with grandmothers raising our young moms. But he's absolutely right. We have to find a way for mentors to get to these young kids.
Dan downtown. Dan, you're on Talk Louisiana with Hill or Moore. Hi, Dan. Let's see. There we go.
With all these trigger pullers, do you think the National Rifle Association should go back to its original focus on gun safety rather than being a front for the gun manufacturers and their profits?
I mean, you know, I'm not sure. I think that we're talking about guns and the people at kids that handle guns. They're going to continue handling guns. One of the discussions we had was, should we also incorporate in our court process gun safety? Because, you know, the guns are just proliferating now. And so I think gun safety is going to be an issue. But I really think the focus now has to be, this is a public health emergency now. Just like we did with seat belts and smoking, we made significant strides in that area. I think that we have to now focus on this as a public health issue.
877-217-5757. Dan downtown. Thank you, sir. Phil in Jefferson Terrace. Hi, Phil. Good morning.
Hi, Jim. And thank you, Mr. Moore, for the work that you do. I understand that there's an increase in carjackings in New Orleans. What would you advise people, or is there a place to look at what to do in case your car is being carjacked?
Hey, I'm really glad you brought that up, because that's the one number that I forgot to mention when we talked about the national average. On a national average, for some reason, motor vehicle theft and carjacking are up 12%. We haven't seen that quite as much in Baton Rouge as I've heard, as the gentleman just indicated, in New Orleans. But, man, I would not confront anyone that's trying to take my car from me. I would try to get out of the way as quickly as you can and call the police, because you don't know who has a weapon. And you may have a weapon in your car that they get to before you. I would just be very careful on that and just call the police as quickly as you can.
And speaking of cars, another listener notes about this proliferation of drag racing we're seeing at all hours of the day and night. What's going on there?
You know, I really don't know, but we saw a lot of that happening, not only on Plank Road, but Airline Highway and other
Corsi Boulevard.
Yeah, Corsi Boulevard as well. I think they may be coming out from other parties that they've been to, large gatherings, and then they're in the streets and they're taking up both sides of the streets. Extremely dangerous, extremely reckless, but not only drag racing, but it's also shots being fired from those weapons, which is very dangerous.
You still go, if you're available, to every murder scene, don't you?
Try to go as many as I can.
And some would say you're in danger.
You know, surely you can be in danger wherever you go. You don't know who's out there at the scenes and what kind of rub they
may have. Or in danger anywhere you go.
Sure, or what kind of rub they may have with you wherever you go. But it's it's one of those calculated risks that you take. It's a lot of policemen at crime scenes. So.
And amazingly, you seem to enjoy what you do.
I think I have the best job in Louisiana with the best people working for great citizens here that mm-hmm. are struggling right now. And I wake up every day loving the job that I have and the people I work with and wanting to do better. This really, you know, wears on me just personally. That's as the DA, I have 149 murders. It's not something that we want. We need mm-hmm. to cut this number down. We need to be mindful.
Now, T is on deck. We'll go to T. But here's a question from Kristen about the number of jury trials in New Orleans. They've completely shut it down for a while, haven't
Until
they?
Until March of this year, at least right now, to March. So that's, you know, that's tough because when these people do not see juries and judges and trials and active, they believe they can get away with
it. And Baton Rouge is in close proximity.
Absolutely.
Some of these people come from other places, too.
Absolutely. Yes.
T in Innisfail Estates. Hi, T. You're on with Hiller Moore.
Yes. I just wanted to ask Hiller Moore, why do he believe that Louisiana has the highest incarceration rate in the world? And also, does that play a factor into the teens that you guys want to say that's doing all the shooting that doesn't have fathers?
Surely, some fathers are incarcerated, and that's maybe why some folks don't have fathers, but I think you have to look to see whether they were being a father before they were incarcerated. Why does Louisiana have the highest incarceration rate? I think it's pretty easy when you look at Louisiana as they rank in any ranking, whether it be poverty, race, education, income, education, mm-hmm. you name it, look where Louisiana is and have been historically for decades and decades, and that's why I think you see why we are where we are.
We have had the number one homicide rate in America per capita for 32 consecutive years.
And that number will probably continue until we change all of the underlying basis that we have, and it just has to stop.
Education?
No doubt. Education
poverty.
Drives it all. Yes.
There are any number of reasons, but the economy. We have a big gap in Louisiana that is between the haves and have-nots. And,
yes.
And in certain pockets, as we know, we have neighborhoods that are opulent, and then we have others that are destitute. And it's a no-brainer that most of the crimes in the neighborhoods that are destitute.
Sure. If you drive through Baton Rouge and the areas that we go to often for homicides, you'll see a different side of Baton Rouge that you've never seen.
We'll be back to wrap it up with Hiller Moore after this time out on Talk Louisiana. This is Jim Engster. We're wrapping it up with Hiller Moore, the district attorney for East Baton Rouge Parish. And then we have the extraordinary Danielle Friedman on, who has a book about the women's fitness craze. Let's get physical. But before we let Hiller go, a listener asked a good point about New Orleans, Baton Rouge, which unfortunately are among the top cities in America when it comes to rates of homicides. The DA there is a new guy, Jason Williams. Do you and he talk on occasion?
Often. Jason and I are friends. We have different cities. We have different politics here. We do things differently. But Jason spent a lot of time here in Baton Rouge before he took office, after he was elected, looking at all the programs and the ways we do things. He has to do things his own way in New Orleans. Things will probably change as they go. But we do talk often. It's generally myself, him, and the district attorney in Jefferson Parish because we're close to each other and we have the same issues and problems. And we try to meet fairly regularly to discuss things.
Well, Hiller Moore, we commend you for what you do. It's a tough job, but fortunately you like what you do, and I think you're making a difference. So keep going. Thank you very much.
Happy
New Year. Thank you. We're visiting now with Danielle Friedman. It's certainly a lighter topic, but an important one. Physical fitness, and used to be that gyms were dominated by men, but that's not the case anymore. There might be more women than men now go to fitness facilities, and if you look around, women are probably in better shape than men are. And the book from Danielle Friedman is Let's Get Physical. Remember the Olivia Newton-John song? And how did this wave start, Danielle? It is relatively new, but I think of Jane Fonda. She was talking about it in the 70s and 80s. What was the catalyst and what was the origin?
Hi, Jim. Thank you so much for having me on. So my book begins in the 1950s, which was a period of really strict gender norms and social norms in this country. And that meant that for women, the idea of sweating or pushing themselves physically, cultivating muscle, was really threatening. It really went against the idea that, you know, men had to be men and were strong and women had to be dainty and fragile. And so it was really a kind of subversive concept. But beginning in the 50s, there were a few really standout women's fitness pioneers who began to send the message that it was okay for women to pursue muscle and that women could benefit from it. Of course, it was also sold at that time as a beauty tool. It was, you know, develop muscle to become more attractive to your man. But it was beginning to counter these deeply ingrained beliefs. And then it really began to change in the late 60s, thanks partly to the work of these early pioneers. But in the 60s, we saw both the first real body of medical research showing that it was not only safe for women to exercise, but that it was beneficial to their health. Before then, there were a lot of myths about what exercise could do to a woman's body, which was sort of a kind of cultural backstop for progress. Many women believed it would, you know, make their uterus fall out or turn them into a man. That was a common belief. And then, there was a new body of research, and there was the rise of the women's movement, which sent the idea that women could and should be strong.
I had the pleasure of interviewing Jack LaLanne, usually every year on his birthday, until he died in 2011. And, mm-hmm. and he started, of course, back in the 30s. I think he had the first fitness club in America in Oakland, California. But he was fighting some of the same misconceptions that working out, particularly if you use weights, would make you bulky and less flexible, that it would destroy your sex drive, perhaps make you sterile. So men went through this, and now women have as well, and there is also, unfortunately, a stereotype that women should look a certain way, but muscles are attractive on anybody, aren't they?
Well, I think so. And yes, Jack LaLanne was a real pioneer in this space. I had the opportunity to interview his wife, Elaine LaLanne, for this book, who is in her mid-90s and still going strong, literally and figuratively. She still works out. And we talked about some of those myths that that Jack LaLanne faced. You know, the fact that we now consider muscle beautiful, for better or worse, that didn't just happen overnight. It was really, you know, it involved the work of many pioneers, male and female, who used themselves as an example to show that, you know, we could be strong, we could, there was benefits to exertion that wouldn't harm us, that we could withstand it. You know, but for a really long time for women, and even Jack LaLanne, if you look back at his early programs, exercise had to be sold as a way to become more beautiful. So it's a very tricky and complicated marriage between strength, the pursuit of strength, and beauty culture.
And Maggie in Goodwood asks our guest, Danielle Friedman, the author of Let's Get Physical, about how the pandemic has caused people to perhaps be more focused on their health, but at the same time, fewer people are going to gyms to work out because of the fear of contracting COVID. What's going on in the world we're in right now?
Yeah, so I've heard a lot of, anecdotal reports about how the pandemic has shifted the way we think about fitness. On one hand, I've heard that many women have told me they've been emboldened to try workouts that they might not have tried before because they've been able to do them in the privacy of their homes with so many classes and brands moving online. They've been able to participate without fear of embarrassment. In fact, it's interesting. A physical therapist I interviewed told me that her business shot way up in the months after the pandemic began because people were trying so many new things that they were actually injuring themselves. So it's a blessing and a curse. But I also have heard that the pandemic has allowed people to kind of reconsider the way that they move and the way that they spend their time. And in some cases, it's given people a deeper appreciation for their health and for what their bodies can do. So something like just going outside for a walk, breathing fresh air, moving in a way that feels good and restorative, is being, you know, given more due now than it might have been a few years ago when it was a little bit more of a harder, faster, stronger mentality.
Our guest, Danielle Friedman, is an award-winning journalist whose feature writing has largely been about other topics in places like the New York Times, Vogue, Harper's Bazaar, Glamour, Health. And she worked as a senior editor at NBC News Digital and The Daily Beast. And this is something that you're becoming quite a proponent of, and it's apparent in Let's Get Physical. But 5 years ago, that was not the case, was it?
No, well, in the past few years, I mean, we really have started to see a shift. We've seen a shift away from fitness as a tool for shaping our bodies to meet a very specific cultural ideal and toward being something that women can really harness for their overall mental and emotional health and well-being. And for me as a journalist, I've written about women, you know, various aspects of women's health and psychology and of feminist culture for a long time. And this topic, it just became clear to me, was kind of like the nexus of all of those things. And I see an opportunity here to, like I said, to harness fitness in a way that improves women's quality of life. I think so many women, and especially during the pandemic, are struggling right now, are uh-huh. overburdened, exhausted, burnt out. And so any opportunity to engage in true self-care that makes us feel better and more socially connected should be explored.
And I mentioned Jane Fonda, who's known far and wide for her role in the fitness movement, particularly among women. But you credit none other than Debbie Reynolds. How did Debbie Reynolds have an effect on this?
Sure. Well, I will say her effect was a bit more incidental. But Jane Fonda very much launched the home fitness video industry. And in fact, as I describe in my book, she actually really helped to launch the entire home video industry. Before Jane Fonda, very few people owned VCRs. No one understood why you would need to own a tape, because why would you want to watch a movie so many times? A very different attitude than today. But with a workout video, you needed to own it, because in order to benefit, you had to do it regularly. So Jane Fonda launched this massive fitness home video industry. And in the years that followed, her first video came out in 1982. There were dozens of mostly celebrities. I don't want to say copycats, because they brought their own, they put their own spin on it, but they were following in her footsteps. So one of those celebrities was Debbie Reynolds, who was the front woman for just an amazing vintage workout. And she had somehow convinced many of her celebrity friends, including Shelley Winters and Terry Garr, and I believe Florence Henderson.
Well, we've got a roll, and unfortunately, we won't be able to get to a few callers, but thank you for participating. Thank you, Danielle. Congratulations. Signature support from First Financial Tax and Accounting. Stay safe. Stay tuned.